Hi, it's Mountain Edition, all the news from the week here in the Roaring Fork Valley coming at you in the next half hour. I'm Kristen Kay, and I'm thrilled to be here with Allison Bechtesh. Hi, Allison.
Hi, Kristen. I'm thrilled to be here with you. Happy holidays.
So, Allison, this week we bring a lot of big things happening nationally back home here for all of us in the Roaring Fork Valley. We'll talk about implications with the repeal of net neutrality laws, the rollback of Obama-era protections for Dreamers, and the chance for military veterans from all over America to come here and connect with nature for a few days.
We'll also talk about the little things like those tiny snowflakes that fell overnight. Even the man-made variety that is out on the mountain, and bananas in snowmass last weekend.
Well, be forewarned, we make no promises not to go too bananas in here. The biggest stories from this week coming up on Mountain Edition. Allison, I want to start by talking about a story that happened over the weekend. The Federal Communications Commission, or FCC, got rid of net neutrality laws that prevent internet providers from favoring certain websites over others. And also throughout Colorado and here in the Roaring Fork Valley, citizens have voted to allow their local governments to get into the broadband game. So can you connect some dots for us here?
Absolutely. And the biggest thing is saying how much they are not connected. Though we have voted for public broadband, that doesn't mean that we have this public access to the utility based on the way we voted on it here in the Valley.
And it's been more than 2 years ago now that Pitkin County voters weighed in on municipal broadband. So catch us up with what's happening there.
So the vote that's going on all around the state is to repeal a 2005 law that forbids governments from getting into the game, essentially. It does not assure broadband, and it doesn't necessarily mean even that government would provide that utility. Here in Pitkin County, we're just working on those last mile services. Pitkin has radio towers that are valuable infrastructure to internet providers, and they weren't even allowed to partner with them to offer those previously. Now they're also widening the pipes, essentially, that allows for data speeds to flow through, and they're building those out to rural areas. Then they'll go back to providers and say, hey, you don't have to take on that cost, but will you take on these new customers?
What's the relation between that and the elimination of net neutrality laws?
First of all, there's lots of people who are very against the decision, so this will probably be held up in court, and we have a little bit of time to deal with it. The basic fear is that deals will be worked out where big content creators, the go-to example is Netflix, can pay for their site to stream really fast, and other companies won't be able to compete. Kara Silbernagle is overseeing this project for the county. She told me this really plays out at what's called the headpoints. So these are massive internet motherships. They're in Denver, Salt Lake, Albuquerque. What goes fast and slow does not play out on the local level. The effect, though, absolutely comes to fruition here. She says the county has their eye on critical government services that happen on the web, such as voter registration.
So throughout the state, we've seen 80 to 90% approval for governments helping to provide broadband. So what's happening with those efforts now that the feds are kind of in the mix?
Here's Silbernagle talking about those overwhelming votes. And remember, a lot of this around here is about that last mile, getting internet to Rudi, to Thomasville. So opening up the internet to rural areas as opposed to restricting it.
And so it's very difficult when we're making efforts to bridge that digital divide. And then at the federal level, it just feels like, you know, kind of a step back of, well, we can't ensure what kind of access you're actually going to get.
She says it's a whole new game that everyone will be watching, but that the overwhelming voter support means they will keep building. As we said earlier, lawsuits might hold up this net neutrality decision, but she also said she's counting on the public to report if they start seeing varying speeds. First, report it to your providers, then to her office at the county, and then to elected officials.
Okay, thank you for your time, Allison.
My pleasure.
The U.S. Forest Service released a draft decision Tuesday to log up to 1,800 acres in the Upper Frying Pan Valley.
Elizabeth Stewart Severy reports.
Forest Service officials say the plan provides timber to local industries, improves the diversity of the forest, and offers snowshoe hare habitat. Local residents had expressed concern about damage to pristine wildlife habitat and popular recreation areas, and increased traffic on the narrow Frying Pan Road. The decision removes 35 acres from the original logging proposal in order to protect high-quality habitat for the endangered Canada lynx. The Forest Service has acknowledged that the project could have negative impacts on foraging and nesting habitat for several birds of prey species. Elizabeth Stewart Severy, Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
Workplace harassment investigations at the state capitol have historically fallen to House and Senate leaders. But after numerous allegations of sexual harassment in the statehouse were uncovered, things are starting to change.
As Benta Berglund reports, an independent human resources person will be hired. It's not clear yet exactly what that role will do.
The current arrangement is seen by some as a conflict of interest, and for others, it's a deterrent for those wanting to file claims. And because of our reporting, legislative leaders are now calling for change.
The question obviously is this a perfectly functioning system? Evidently not. Otherwise, I don't think we'd be here today.
That's Republican Senate President Kevin Grantham. During a special meeting on Friday, leadership agreed to hire an outside consultant to improve the conditions for all who come forward with claims of misconduct. Also, sexual harassment training will be expanded to include more aides and interns, and possibly lobbyists, and will occur yearly.
All those that have been blessed, who have been honored to serve in this building, the People's Building, want to do everything within our power to ensure that this is a safe, welcoming, dignified, comfortable place for conducting the people's business.
Democratic Speaker of the House Chrisanta Duran echoed that concern.
There are actions and rhetoric that have become normalized that are unacceptable and inappropriate. We also have to have a conversation and feedback as to how we change the culture at the Capitol.
Lawmakers decided that a human resources person should immediately be hired. Still, there seemed to be some uncertainty about just how much power this position would have, as Republican Senate Majority Leader Chris Hulbert wondered.
Does that person then handle that issue from start to finish, or does he or she do some sort of a incoming report and evaluation and then refer it to the existing people who are the reporting contacts? I don't know which way is right.
That's something lawmakers will have to decide when they return to the Capitol on January 10th. Any changes to the workplace harassment policy require legislative approval. Senate Minority Leader Lucia Guzman, a Democrat, says there needs to be a transformation.
The goal probably for most of us is, how do we change the climate? Because if we don't get a climate where these things are prevented, then we have done very little, and all of this has been ineffective in a way.
About 40 aides and interns working at the Capitol submitted a letter to legislative leaders asking for reforms. They want more security, saying they are fearful of having to work with lawmakers under investigation or those they've had problems with. And because no part of a formal complaint is public record, others want more transparency. That issue didn't come up during the meeting. Aaron Hottenstein is the founder of the group Colorado 50-50, which tries to get women to run for elected office. She says the number and type of complaints and the person who was accused should be public.
Ultimately, the voters are the boss of the lawmaker. And so if the media and voters do not have the information about the performance of the lawmaker, they can't do anything about it. They can't, you know, not support them in the next election, or even in a more extreme case, ask them to resign. It is a massive problem that there is not transparency in this system.
On November 10th, we were the first to report allegations about the conduct of Representative Steve Lebsack, a Democrat from Thornton who's running for state treasurer. He's facing two formal complaints, including one from Representative Faith Winter, also a Democrat, as well as allegations from 10 other women. Lebsack denies any wrongdoing. We also broke allegations of sexual harassment against Senators Randy Baumgartner and Jack Tate. Both are Republicans. Additionally, Representative Paul Rosenthal, a Democrat, is facing a complaint from a former roommate. I'm Benta Berglund.
You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Allison Bechtesh.
And I'm Kristen Kay. And Allison, obviously, if people are listening to Mountain Edition, they want to stay in the know about local news.
Who wouldn't? And they can also stay on top of what's happening with Aspen Public Radio and throughout the community by liking our Facebook page.
On our Facebook page, you can interact with our station through comments on our posts and by messaging us directly.
This week on Facebook, there's behind-the-scenes photos from several of the stories we're covering today. That always adds a little bit more.
Everyone loves going behind the scenes. Check it out by searching Aspen Public Radio on Facebook. December is ski season, with or without much natural snow. Environment reporter Elizabeth Stewart-Severy is here to talk about how Aspen Skiing Company is keeping up with skier demand. Good morning, Elizabeth.
Hi, Kristen.
So we know it's been warm this fall and winter, and that obviously has impacts on snowmaking. Has SkiCo been making more snow than usual?
No, they haven't yet. So every year, SkiCo sets targets for the amount of snow they'll make at each mountain. They had to start snowmaking quite late this year because of how warm it's been. And I talked with Rich Berkeley, who's a vice president at SkiCo. He says they're behind where they'd be on an average year. SkiCo usually tries to wrap up snowmaking operations in December. That has to do with cost more than anything else. Snowmaking is expensive because of the amount of power that it takes. So every month that SkiCo makes snow, they pay a penalty for drawing lots of power, and that can be up to like $50,000 before they even start making snow.
So we talked about electricity, but what about water? Is this a drain, pardon the pun, on Aspen's water system?
Well, SkiCo uses about 200 million gallons of water per year to make snow. And Berkeley points out that this is very little compared to what flows in the Roaring Fork River, which of course it should be since there are a lot of demands on that river. Each mountain pulls from a different water source. Aspen Mountain uses City of Aspen tap water, and when it's running at full bore, the snowmaking system up there uses 3,000 gallons of water per minute. That sounds like a lot. Berkeley says it's just a blip in the water system. Highlands also uses city water, but it's untreated and it's pulled directly from the city's reservoir up Castle Creek Road. Buttermilk and Snowmass are a little different. Both of those are based on water rights. That means they have to stop using water from those creeks when flows are below the minimum in-stream flow. That's an environmental protection that's set by the state. And that tends to happen when it's really cold outside, which is inconvenient for Ski Company because that's when they really want to be making snow because mm-hmm. it's most efficient to make snow when it's very cold. So in Snowmass, they've addressed that issue by storing water at Ziegler Reservoir to use for snowmaking, and then they can refill that during warmer days. And that's particularly helpful this year because all terrain that's open at Snowmass right now is on totally man-made snow.
But that's not the case at Aspen Mountain. It's been open since Thanksgiving on a very thin base at the top. Since snowmaking there only runs to about two-thirds of the way up the mountain, what are the conditions like up top?
The snow is actually holding up pretty well at the top. I caught up with Rich Berkeley at the celebration for Snowmass's 50th anniversary, and he gives all the credit for those conditions to the snowcat crews.
Mostly I just kneel down and give them the I worship at your feet kind of look.
So there's a lot of love for the people who've been working pretty much nonstop to keep the skiing going.
All right. Thank you, Elizabeth.
You bet.
In September, the Trump administration rolled back Obama-era protections for Dreamers. These are the immigrants who were brought to the U.S. illegally as children.
Dreamers studying and working in the Valley are worried they might not be allowed to stay, and they're letting our politicians know about it. Wyatt Orm recently attended a rally in Glenwood Springs and brings us some of their stories.
It's cold, huh? Yeah. All right, but to start off, I want to thank every single one of you for coming out here.
The crowd gathering outside Glenwood Springs High School isn't deterred by the cold. Many are dreamers, and they say their lives are on the line. Getsemani Grajales is one of them. She was 15 when she and her two little sisters crossed the U.S.-Mexico border.
They had us in this little trailer full of 60 people. It was July. It was so hot. We didn't have any food.
They came to be with their mom, who was here working.
That was my main reason. That was my motor to protect my sisters because I wanted to see my mom again.
But even after they reunited, Getsemani says she was still fearful being undocumented. She calls this living in the shadows.
I was afraid of going to school, afraid of driving to school, afraid of asking for a job. I felt like my body was here, but I was somewhere else.
In 2012, she had just earned a physics degree when President Obama signed the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Policy, or DACA. People like Getsemani were temporarily shielded from deportation. She could get a driver's license and a work permit.
So I could go anywhere I wanted with my bachelor's degree and be able to work here legally.
But
it was never going to allow for any immigration status for these young people because that requires a change in the law.
That's Violeta Chapin. She's a law professor at CU Boulder.
The DREAM Act is a little bit of a unicorn since it doesn't exist, actually.
But if it existed, if it were passed, It would be that change in the law, Chapin says. It would give someone like Getsemani status and put her on a path towards citizenship.
Out of your day, the call Scott Tipton, call his office.
Alan Munoz is on the loudspeaker. He's an 18-year-old college student and says he's been terrified since the Trump administration rescinded DACA in September. He's tired of the Dream Act not existing.
And I mean a clean Dream Act, not the Dream Act that they have in Congress right now. No more money for more border security, no more money for more immigration reinforcement, and no more money for a stupid wall.
Violetta Chapin doesn't think Republicans will agree to protect Dreamers and not fund things like more immigration enforcement.
They have a majority in Congress, and they have no incentive to pass a clean Dream Act when they could get other things. And right now, quite frankly, the Democrats don't have much bargaining power.
Here in Colorado, there is bipartisan support for the Dream Act. Senators Michael Bennett, a Democrat, and Cory Gardner, a Republican, co-sponsored this year's bill.
I said Tipton!
The group in Glenwood Springs is focused on Representative Scott Tipton. In a statement, Tipton says he supports a, quote, common sense and compassionate solution for Dreamers. But he also says he wants a more secure border to prevent illegal immigration. As the politicians figure out where they stand, the clock is ticking. DACA expires in March, and if Congress fails to act, Dreamers would lose their ability to work here. They could be deported. Getsemani Grajales got a taste of this a few weeks ago. She had renewed her DACA paperwork, but didn't have it in hand yet. She thought she was going to lose her job.
It was as if I was carrying a backpack full of rocks, and I was sleeping with a backpack full of rocks, and I would wake up with a backpack full of rocks, and I felt so stressed and so tired.
But the papers eventually came. Getsemani says if there's one thing she can share with her fellow Dreamers, it's just that, the ability to dream.
Yes, we may not be here tomorrow, but we might. Yeah. We might get to stay.
Wyatt Orm, Aspen Public Radio News.
This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh.
And I'm Kristen Kay. In other local news, the Glenwood Springs Police Department has seen a dramatic increase in shoplifting in the past 2 weeks.
Aspen City Council considers funding a project to tell the story of the John Denver Sanctuary.
A Republican state lawmaker who was arrested for bringing a gun to Denver International Airport will not be criminally prosecuted.
And we spend a day with the bootpackers who helped to prepare the iconic Highland Bowl.
Those stories and more news are on our website now. Take a listen at aspenpublicradio.org. On Tuesday, Garfield County joined other Valley governments in funding a housing study.
As Wyatt Orm reports, the county pledged $10,000, $5,000 less than what they were asked for.
The money will be used to study the housing crunch, stretching from Pitkin County all the way to Parachute. The study would identify the housing needs that a regional housing authority would address with new local taxes. Bill Lamont presented to Garfield County's commissioners. He and a colleague are corralling support for the authority. Commissioner John Martin opposes any funding. He said Up Valley communities like Aspen and Snowmass created the housing crunch.
It's got to stop. What amounts to is we need to have housing in those communities that need workers, period. They need to take care of their problem.
Lamont said agreeing to help fund the study did not mean the county was joining the authority. The Aspen-Pitkin County Housing Authority has pledged $25,000 for the needs assessment, $5,000 more than they were asked for. Eagle County has pledged $15,000. Wyatt Orm, Aspen Public Radio News.
Snowmass Ski Area celebrated its 50th anniversary over the weekend. Saturday, Banana Days was resurrected.
As Claire Woodcock reports, a townwide scavenger hunt had visitors searching for 1,967 plastic bananas.
I get it.
The Reddy family is riding the Skittles gondola from Bass Village. Gotham and Chandra Reddy are taking their children, Raj and Neela, up to Snowmass Mall to redeem their bananas after a day on the slopes. They tell me finding the bananas was a family effort.
You got it on a tree, right, Neela? Where was yours?
On the tree.
On the tree, reach
for it. Well, I found it for you.
The family is on vacation from Dallas. It's the kids' first ski trip.
They picked it up pretty fast.
Then we started ice skating on the snow for some reason.
Charles the Banana Myers works for SkiCo at Buttermilk. He says there's not a lot of snow there, so his supervisor asked him to come to Snowmass Village Mall dressed as a banana.
And I was like, I would love to. It's a dream come true.
He affirms the conditions out there are icy.
I'd hate to fall and be a bruised banana.
Banana Days in Snowmass dates back to the 80s. Longtime local Renee Flesher, who helped collect prizes for the scavenger hunt, recalls Banana Days back then.
It's really fun to reenact the Banana Days that we used to do. The only thing that's missing is the people who used to jump naked into the pool.
Myers the Banana thinks it's cool for the community to be bringing back Banana Days for new generations to experience.
It's so crazy off the wall, it's bananas.
Claire Woodcock, Edlis Neeson Arts and Culture Desk.
In Eagle, Pitkin, and Garfield counties, more than 2,000 children are on the Children's Health Insurance Program, or CHIP. It's federally funded and provides health insurance to children from low-income families as well as pregnant women. Congress let the program expire in September, and states are starting to run low on or run out of CHIP money. If Congress fails to reauthorize CHIP, these people could lose their health insurance. To learn more, I'm joined in the studio by our reporter, Wyatt Orme. Hi, Wyatt.
Hi.
So how is CHIP different than, say, Medicaid?
CHIP was actually created in the 1990s to piggyback off Medicaid. It provides health insurance for children in low-income families whose parents are making just enough not to qualify for Medicaid. In Colorado, more than 75,000 kids and pregnant women are covered with CHIP. And if the program goes away, there's a good chance many will lose that health coverage.
And what happens if they can't get that health insurance?
It's possible some kids could get coverage through their parents' health insurance. Some could get covered through the Affordable Care Act. But it's likely that many would go without insurance.
Okay, so if that happens, let's talk about the effects we could see here in the Valley. The CHIP recipients would have to start paying out of pocket for health care.
That's right. And because of that, they'd probably avoid going to the doctor. They probably would only get health care when they most needed it. And that means, you know, going to the emergency room, which is really expensive for the whole healthcare system. One of the biggest concerns, of course, is that the rate of uninsured will continue to rise. Take Mountain Family Health, which is a network of community health centers that operates here in the Roaring Fork Valley and also over in the Eagle River Valley. Ross Brooks, the CEO, told me that they currently have over 850 kids and pregnant moms who are on CHIP. And if this funding goes away, those people lose coverage. So 850 more uninsured people that Mountain Family Health is going to take care of. But the more and more uninsured that Mountain Family has to take care of, the more expensive it gets for them. And it's no way to run a business. So they will likely have to start trimming their services.
When does CHIP money run out in Colorado?
February 1st. Ross Brooks of Mountain Family Health told me that maybe the state can shift money around for a couple of months to cover the lack of CHIP funding, but it would only be a temporary fix. And right now, Congress does not have a bill to fund CHIP on the table. In the meantime, there are resources available if you have CHIP or if your children have CHIP and you need to think about other options. For example, Pitkin County's Economic Assistance Department has appointments available for English and Spanish speakers to kind of discuss options. Maybe there's a possibility your family could purchase health insurance on the exchange and use tax credits to bring down premiums. There are options if Congress fails to act.
Okay, thank you, Wyatt.
You're welcome.
Allison, a lot of us here find solace in our mountains, and last week, servicemen and women came to Aspen to participate in the first ever military ski week. The nonprofit Challenge America offered discounts on lift tickets and lodging for the military community.
And as Elizabeth Stewart's every found, they also had some time to heal and reconnect in nature.
You look out across the mountains and you can see into Iran, you can see almost all the way into Turkey, you can look back into Iraq.
Stacy Bear spends a lot of time in the mountains, but he says one day rises above the rest.
And I think what it was like was that I remember being up there, my mind's blown, and it's so beautiful, it's so amazing. It felt like there were hundreds of people on that mountaintop with me, friends that had died in Iraq, friends that had died when we got home, people that didn't serve but support me and love me, and it just felt like they were all there in a really real way.
Bear is a veteran of the Iraq War, and he was in Aspen last week for Military Ski Week. He didn't want the war to be his only experience in Iraq, so last winter he went back to Summit and then ski Mount Halgard, the second highest peak in the country.
getting to the top of Mount Haggard in Iraq was certainly one of the best moments I've had in the mountains.
But the trail to that high started in a deep valley. When Bear returned home from Iraq, he threw himself into graduate school, but also drug addiction and alcoholism. He says he came home from war, but the war never really left him. That started to change when a friend got him out climbing.
Time outside gives you that moment to live in the now. It gives you an opportunity to breathe fresh air, recognize what you fought for, see something that is beautiful, connect with other people.
It is that state of flow. It's, you know, kind of forgetting about everything else that's going on and just being really able to relax into the moment. This turn and that turn, the rest of it, it's gone. And that's a really cool feeling.
Kelly Williams is a retired Navy chief. He was also in Aspen last week. And his wife, Debbie, says she sees a dramatic change in Kelly when he's out here. Part of Kelly's work in the Navy was in psychological operations. Debbie says he still dwells on that work, but not when he's out in the mountains.
It gets him out of his head. It gets him focused on what he's doing at the moment.
Bear worked with researchers at the University of California at Berkeley to create the Great Outdoors Lab, which studies the cognitive and physical benefits of time immersed in the natural world. They found that moments of awe,
that moment where you're like, wow,
can pull people into immediate mindfulness, almost a meditative state. Bear says he feels it every time he drives into the Roaring Fork Valley.
Every time I turn and I see Mount Sopras, every time I've seen that mountain hundreds of times over the years, and every time I'm always like, and I can just feel my body relax, right? And that's kind of what it is.
The research from the Great Outdoors Lab is now being peer-reviewed. It shows significant benefits from time in nature, including dramatic reductions in stress. Dallas Blaney is director of operations for Challenge America, which is based in Basalt. He says this week can be a starting point for veterans to connect with nature and give back.
Given that so many public lands right now are under threat again, we need that kind of a group whose patriotism is unimpeachable to stand up in defense of these natural places.
Blaney is a veteran himself and a champion of public lands. For many veterans, retirement from military service can mean a lost sense of purpose, but getting outside and reconnecting just may create a new spark.
And that's what so many veterans need. They need a mission. Well, what better mission than to save nature? How cool is that?
So when veterans are carving turns in Aspen, it's about more than just a day of fresh air. It's also about the values they fought for, freedom and liberty. Stacy Bear says this is exactly how a week of skiing in Aspen can have a lasting impact.
And that's where I think a place like Aspen Ski Week brings people together for the military and says, this is what you fought for. This country, these ideals are rooted in a physical place and space, and not just here in Aspen, but enjoy this.
And in the end, Bear and Blaney agree. It's about getting more people outside to experience those moments of awe, whether it's climbing or skiing or finding any other way to take a breath of fresh air. Elizabeth Stewart Severy, Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
That's all for Mountain Edition this week. I'm Kristen Kay.
And I'm Allison Bektesh. You can find more news from the Roaring Fork Valley and national and international news on our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
Tune into Valley Roundup tomorrow at 3:30. Allison, you're going behind the biggest headlines of 2017 with Valley reporters and editors, and it's going to be a really fun show.
The full year in half an hour. I'm very excited. Thanks for listening. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.